Professor and researcher, author and traveler David Mould has spent a decade working in the region of the Indian Ocean, and he reports on it in his book, Monsoon Postcards, Indian Ocean Journeys. And this is an area when I look at it, I just think, I want to go to all of these places, but so many of them are total mysteries to me. So David joins us now just to talk about some of the highlights of the countries that ring the Indian Ocean. So David, thanks for joining us.
Pleased to be with you.
So David, you've traveled all through this region, and I'd like to just kind of bounce through it now as people who are spinning the globe and trying to imagine traveling to one of these places. And one country that comes up in so many ways is Madagascar. It's the world's fourth largest island, and you've been there, what, four or five times? And from your writing, it just feels like you're enamored with it. What do you find interesting about Madagascar?
You know, Madagascar's fascinating. I mean, people know Madagascar because of its biodiversity. I mean, it was part of this great ancient continent Gondwana that broke apart. And so for thousands of years, plant life and animal life in Madagascar existed separate from other continents. So you have species there that are not known anywhere else in the world.
What are the most beloved species? What animals do tourists love to see?
It's the cuddly lemur.
Yeah.
Well, far and away, you know. And I've seen lemurs, and they climb on your shoulder, and they hope you've brought them bananas. So a lot of tourists, you know, go for the jungle tours to see the lemurs and some other wildlife as well. Those are mostly European and North American tourists. The French tourists go for the beaches. I mean, you can fly to the north of Madagascar to a place called Nosibé, which translates as Big Island, directly from Paris, you know. And you go to the beach there, and, you know, it's a wonderful French haute cuisine at astonishingly low prices, and you've never lost home. You know, Madagascar is between Guadeloupe and Martinique alphabetically in the French tourist brochures.
Wow. I didn't realize that. So it's just a beautiful sunbreak for the French and get some change of scenery.
We went to Martinique last year. Oh, let's go to Madagascar. You know, the beaches look just as nice, you know.
Right.
Everybody speaks French there, and there's pas de problème.
Okay, so you've got this sort of unrealistic resort zone, but the country itself is quite poverty-stricken, isn't it?
The country, yeah. If you look at the kind of development indicators for health, economic status, child mortality, maternal mortality, water and sanitation. I mean, the country is one of the poorest in the world, and it has a weak and impoverished central government. It's highly reliant on foreign aid. So most of the people in the country are subsistence farmers,
mm-hmm.
and they can't get their goods to market because the roads are pretty bad. I did a trip from the capital, Antananarivo, about 550 miles across the country to a place called Toliara, which is on the southwest coast. Now, the reason I took that trip rather than fly was that the national airline was on strike, as it often is. It's either on strike or the management's changed or they've got no fuel. And Air Madagascar's one passenger described to me as Air Maybe. Maybe they'll fly, maybe they won't. But the result was that I took this wonderful trip out of the central highlands of Madagascar, the rice paddies, through the tropical rainforest to kind of the savanna grasslands, and then to a landscape that to Americans would look like Arizona or New Mexico, a desert, you know, the desert southwest.
So that was a blessing, would you say, that you couldn't get on the plane and you had to make this overland trip?
I think so. I mean, it was an interesting journey. It took 2.5 days to do 550 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that tells you a little bit about the conditions of the roads there.
For this epic road trip, you used the capital city, Antananarivo, as the springboard. And you write quite vividly about that city itself, sort of a chaotic capital city. You say it's like Paris with rice paddies. Describe the capital city of Madagascar to us.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary. You come in from the airport on this kind of busy road, and you know you see it in the distance, and it's built on a series of hills. The old Mariner Malagasy kings built their palaces on tops of the ridges there.
Hmm.
So, you know, the town, the city sort of tumbles down off the ridges, down to the plains. And it's just a fascinating kind of car window display of people and push carts and children playing in the streets. And it's just totally fascinating.
And can you be comfortable there as a Western tourist? Do you have a hotel that provides a refuge where you feel like you're away from the intensity of the streets?
Yeah, there are hotels there, but actually the intensity of the streets is what's interesting about the
right.
place. And
you like 8 hours a day where you don't have the intensity of the streets.
No, that's right. No, you need there's a couple of hotels that I like that, you know, sort
that's
of
good.
Give you a little bit of, you know, a refuge from
yeah.
that.
David Mould is a journalist, researcher, consultant, and teacher whose travels to the nations surrounding the Indian Ocean include a project leading a UNICEF team to develop communication strategies in Bangladesh. David chronicles his journeys through the region in his book, Monsoon Postcards. His latest book comes from exploring national borders in Asia, Southern Africa, and Eastern Europe, and it's called Postcards from the Borderlands. David's website is davidhmould.com. That's spelled M-O-U-L-D. Our interview was recorded just before the COVID pandemic started. Now, David, let's move on to India. You know, India to me is an emotional place to travel. You know, I like to be a tour guide where I can predict what people like and we'll just line it up here and you'll have a good time. But in India, to me, there's a question of how do people handle the intensity? For some people, that's a plus, and for some people, it's a little overwhelming. What's your experience in India and what are your emotions about India?
Very mixed emotions, and I agree with you, Rick, that for some people, India is just too much to take. I mean, the poverty is sometimes really in your face. You know, you're stuck in traffic and people are knocking on your car window, holding out their hands. You know, some of them are genuine beggars. There's also organized begging as well. And then you pass slums.
What is organized begging?
Organized begging, well, as the adjective applies, there is somebody who sends out beggars to collect money and then takes whatever cut they take on what they collect.
You know, India is my favorite country. I can talk about it like it's chaos and intense, but I have never been so entertained and inspired by India. And it reminds me, my concept of pain, my concept of need, of joy, of time, of love, of happiness, it's different than other people's concept. And it really boxes my ethnocentricity. It messes me up. And I love it. I find it very stimulating. Take us to Delhi. I'd like to know your impression as a traveler of the capital city, Delhi, because most of us would go there along with other places when we do go to India.
I mean, Delhi, like every Indian city, has the traffic jams are overwhelming. Poverty, again, is in your face.
You wrote, by the way, I thought it was quite interesting. In Delhi, you can tell the age of a car by the number of dents it has.
Yeah, the Delhi dents. Yeah, you know, there's some cities that I would never drive in. Delhi is certainly one of them. But
somehow, to take a rickshaw in Delhi is a lot of fun because you're just, it's like you're river rafting through this sea of humanity.
Absolutely. And people actually are pretty skilled at it. They know how to weave in and out of the traffic. I mean, doing impossible things that most American drivers would never do. And again,
and there's
you're
a sense
just
going
to like sit back and take it. Yeah.
There's like I'm sitting in a rickshaw in this like amazing wonderland experience. And then suddenly the man in the next rickshaw winks at me and tries to get me to abandon my rickshaw and come over to his rickshaw. that doesn't happen in a taxi in Paris.
Absolutely not. So I guess there is some road rage that occurs there, but people, again, you know, adapt wonderfully well to the conditions there.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with David Mould. The book is Monsoon Postcards, and David spent 10 years traveling around the Indian Ocean countries, and he writes about it in this book. David, let's move along on our Blitz tour here to Bangladesh. And Bangladesh, just for the context, when British India used to include what is also Pakistan and Bangladesh, and those were splitting off because they were Muslim, and then Bangladesh used to be what, East Pakistan, and then it got its own independence. Today, when you think about Bangladesh, it's this relatively small but densely populated country, what, 160 million people. It's essentially where the Ganges River hits the Bay of Bengal, right? It seems to me like a big delta.
Yes, there's a huge delta region. There's the Ganges and there's the Brahmaputra, and another river system called the Meghna. So you've got three large river systems emptying into the Bay of Bengal there. I mean, to give you a sense of scale, Bangladesh is about the size of Illinois or Iowa and half the population of the United States.
Holy cow. And so
think about it that way. It's a very crowded country.
Probably half of that population is within a few feet of sea level. And in 50 years, if the worst scenario on global climate change takes place, there'll be climate refugees.
Well, there are already climate refugees because of saline intrusion, salt water pushing into the Delta region, which means that you can no longer cultivate rice in some of those areas. And so those people, they're going to the cities, try to work in construction or rickshaw pullers or simply selling on the streets. So Bangladesh has a huge population crunch. It has climate refugees. It has Rohingya refugees coming across the border or came across the border from Myanmar. And so, yeah, it's a very crowded country. The metropolitan area of Dhaka, the capital alone, about 20 million.
20
people.
Million. So the traffic jams just never end. And remember, it's 90% Muslim. The per capita income is about 5,000. And you can actually go there as a tourist. And you talked about old Dhaka, sightseeing in old Dhaka, exploring the markets and appreciating the old architecture. What's that like if you're just dropping in because you want to have a Bangladesh experience? Take us on a little walk in old Dhaka.
Well, it's the original part of the city on the banks of the river Buriganga. It started as a small river port with bazaars there. There are some great colonial buildings from both the Mughal and the British colonial periods there. Sadly, many of them are in bad shape because there's not the money to restore them, and developers want to knock them down and put up apartment blocks instead. But it's this fascinating maze of winding streets, most of which have no street names as far as I can tell. And then you end up on the river. And the river's completely fascinating because there you will see these ferries, they're called launches in Bangladesh, which are the main means of transportation for people up and down the country. So you get on one of the launches in Dhaka, and overnight you can end up in Barishal, in the Delta region. And there's also the agricultural produce coming up and being sold on the market. So you look at the riverfront, which is kind of a rough riverfront, a sort of a mud beach, but there are boats pulled up and they're unloading cauliflowers and pumpkins, peppers and vegetables, and then they're shipping building materials out. So I found the riverfront in particular in the old city absolutely fascinating because it shows how the rivers are still crucial to the commerce and the movement of people in Bangladesh.
You wrote, David, that Dhaka, the capital of Bangladesh, is both a boom town and a necropolis. How so?
Yeah, I mean, it is booming. I mean, you know, it's one of those capital cities that sort of sucks in a lot of people and a lot of the wealth of the country. Right. But at the same time, it's a kind of a maddening place to live with the crowding and the traffic and the pollution as well. I mean, the pollution is...
Because we have to think 20 million people in greater Dhaka. That's just mind-blowing. And also, we have to think this monsoon season. You write also quite vividly about how people, they're just used to being wet for 3 months out of the year. Give us a little sense of what it's like to be swimming in Bangladesh.
Yes. You know, in terms of just getting around during the monsoon, I mean, the picture on the front of my book is a street in Dhaka, and these people are pushing this, what the Bangladeshis call a van, which is not a van, actually. It's like a bicycle with a flatbed on the back. You know,
it looks like a three-wheel rickshaw that's been turned into a pickup truck.
Yeah, well, that's the most common form of transportation for both goods and people.
But looking
at
these people, they're just, this is a day of work for them, and there's no sense of, I don't want to get my shoes wet, because they're just swimming. They're like amphibious creatures, and that's their everyday reality.
That is their everyday reality, and that vehicle will probably move better than one of the auto rickshaws, which are probably going to stall out of the cars.
So
people live with it. The real problem in a place like Dhaka is the construction boom And developers have built into the kind of the canals that are supposed to provide the drainage for the city. And so the natural drainage system has been reduced, and also the storm drains are clogged with building materials and stuff like that. So the flooding's a lot worse than it should be. The government recently announced a plan to kind of clean up all the rivers by some date in the future, though. But it's difficult to see how the continuing growth of population and commercial and residential development is going to solve this. I mean, Dhaka's become a more and more difficult city in which to live.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with David Mould, and David's book is called Monsoon Postcards, Indian Ocean Journeys. David, it's been so fascinating to go on a tour with you through this region that so many of us know so little about, and that is a huge percent of humanity, really. From your travels and from the thoughtfulness you've put into reporting on this region, just to wrap up our conversation, what's the one takeaway that you think people in the industrialized world and in Europe and America should have when we think about the countries that ring the Indian Ocean?
I think we should think of these countries in terms of their diversity, and mostly I guess I do not want people to be afraid of these countries. People say to me, oh, you've been to Bangladesh, did you feel safe? And I said, yes, most of the time I felt safe. In fact, I said, I feel in more danger on the west side of Charleston than I do in some areas in these countries. So I think my general message here is not to have fear of the unknown. People in all of these countries are like people in the Western world. They have families, they're going to school, they've got jobs, they're trying to get by in life, and strike up a conversation with people, share some food with them, talk to them on the bus or the train or, you know, on the street, and people will welcome you. And so I guess if I have a mission here, it's to demystify these countries and encourage Americans, Westerners to visit without being worried about them. Let's not generalize too much about countries we don't know enough about.
I find that fear is for people who don't get out very much. And the flip side of fear is understanding, and we gain understanding when we travel. And in my experience, I was afraid to go to India until I got there. And a lot of people are afraid to go to Bangladesh until they get there. David Mould, thanks so much for sharing in such a thoughtful way all the amazing travels you've had and writing your book, Monsoon Postcards, Indian Ocean Journeys.
Thanks, Rick. It's been a great pleasure talking with you.
You can listen to an earlier conversation we had with David about monsoon postcards in our Travel with Rick Steves archives. It's from September 2020. We have a link at ricksteves.com/radio. Are you ready to make travel plans yet? We'll check in with listeners next at 877-333-7425 to hear what kind of travel goals have helped you get through the pandemic lockdowns and where you're ready to travel as soon as we can. We're glad to be travel partners with you on Travel with Rick Steves.